I got on the phone with, actually had a video call with Coach Hack and my agent, and he was presenting, you know, the whole idea of City and, you know, how the facilities were going to be and this and that. And I'm like, man, I'm sold. You know, just it looked like from a team standpoint and what this organization is trying to do aligns well with not just obviously as a player, this is great, but also as a person and what the club stands for. And so when he presented everything to me, I was like, sure, if it works out, I'd love to be a part of this organization.
Good morning and welcome to a new edition of the City Voice podcast. I'm joined by a special guest. It's Josh Yarrow, first team central defender. Josh, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I think that this is the first time we've had you on.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Brilliant. So the way we like to warm up is we have a really important section. It's called Quick Fire Questions.
Oh, I like those.
You have to be quick. They have to be honest. We will be researching after to check that you've given us 100% accurate answers.
Oof. All right. I try to be.
You're ready to go?
As possible. Let's do it.
Okay. Favorite player that is not Ronaldo or Messi?
Oof. Yeah, I wasn't going to pick any of those anyways. For me, I think Martinez with Manchester United, the centre back. I think, I mean, he's not your typical centre back. Most centre backs are huge and big, and I mean, he's what, 5'9"? Really good with his feet. And so, I mean, you see how I am. I'm not a big, tall guy. And so, I mean, he's someone that I look up to quite a bit. I like the way he plays. He plays with a lot of confidence and it's really good on the ball. And so I've grown, I mean, I'm a Manchester United fan. Let's get out of the way.
Okay, all right, that was going to be my next question.
Yes. And so I watch United games and I think he's done a fantastic job so far with the team.
Incredibly versatile, can play left back as well.
Yes.
To a high standard.
Yes.
Okay, coffee or tea?
Definitely tea. I mean, you'd be surprised by this, but I've actually never had coffee.
Never had coffee?
People are always surprised when I tell them that.
I'm a fellow tea drinker. There's not enough of them in St. Louis. It's a bit of an underground thing going on. Yeah, what type of tea?
That's why. So when I grew up, I mean, it's Lipton, but it's a special kind of tea that's actually, I think, I don't know if it's made in Ghana or not, but I used to drink when I was in Ghana. And every time I go home, I bring a bunch back so I can have it, because that's the only kind of tea I drink, and it's really good.
As a Brit, they make British tea here, but they kind of weaken it for the American market, and it's disappointing. So I have to bring tea bags back. I'm one of those people.
Yeah, no, you can't. I mean, I think the way that tea is drunk here, it's pretty different, because I grew up with, you know, like if you're gonna have tea as for breakfast, you know, which I used to do a lot, it's a full on meal. You know, you have, usually how it's done in Ghana, I'll have, you know, like an omelet with it, with some bread, with tea, with some milk, with some a little bit of sugar. But here, usually when it's tea, it's just like the tea leaf and some hot water and that's it. You know, I don't drink tea that way.
Tea culture not quite up to the standard of Josh Yarrow.
No, maybe we've got to bring it to the club.
Got to bring it back.
Teach people how to drink tea.
Yes, I agree. Favorite place to vacation in America?
Definitely Maui. I used to go there quite a bit. I feel like, you know, just like the island life, island time, there's no rush. I think life is much slower, which I do enjoy. And just the scenery as well. You know, I feel like every time I'm there, it's, you know, all my troubles melt away and you can forget about actual life and just enjoy the moment. And so I used to go there quite a bit and I still do enjoy just the lifestyle. And especially, I mean, Hawaii, it's a beautiful state, but just Maui, it's the nature, how green it is and how nice it is. So that's my favorite spot in the US.
Good choice. City you'd most like to visit?
I would like, for a long time now, I've wanted to go to Bali, Indonesia, especially, I think it's Semenyang, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Either that or Ubud in Bali, but really anywhere in Bali. I almost booked a trip for 2020, but obviously couldn't go because of the pandemic. Yeah. So I've been trying to reschedule. I mean, it's a long flight, but sometime when I have the time, I would definitely want to visit either Ubud or Semenyang, or really anywhere in Bali.
FIFA or Call of Duty?
Definitely FIFA.
Player you've been most impressed by at the World Cup?
All right, so this might be a little bit controversial, but being from Ghana and watching the Black Stars, I think Kudus Mohammed had a really fantastic tournament. And he's a kid that grew up playing for the same academy that I came from. And so been following his journey, you know, going from Denmark to Ajax, has done fantastic in Europe. And then as a 22-year-old, pretty much carrying the Ghanaian team on his shoulders. I mean, that's pretty impressive. So definitely I would say him, and maybe Mbappe. I mean, I think this is his walk up.
Yeah. I like the curveball answer. Yeah. Toasty ravioli or Emo's pizza?
So I've had both, because when you're going to Silhouettes, I mean, I think that's people keep asking you if you've had toasted ravioli or Emo's. I didn't really like Emo's. You know, I tried it and everyone kept saying, you know, try Emo's. I'm not a big fan, but toasted raviolis definitely. I did enjoy it, so I'll pick toasted raviolis over.
Toasted ravs for the win. How do you like your steak prepared?
Medium well.
Medium well. Okay, yeah. Good choice. Favorite film?
Ooh, that's always the Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump. Yeah. That's a nice choice. Yeah. Who do you sit next to on the bus or plane when you travel with City?
I usually on the bus, we have enough seats to each have our own seat, but I always sit, so AJ always sits behind me. So that's the closest person I have, you know, and it's always like every road trip we had, I'm always in front of him. He's always behind me.
That turn into like a bit of a superstitious thing?
It did. Yeah, it kind of did. I mean, without even talking about it, because every trip we had, it was always, I was in front of him, he was behind me. And I think Akil was always in front of me. So it always went in that order.
Great. Yeah. Favorite book?
It's a book called The Spirit Catches You and You Fall Down. It was written by, I think, Anne Fiderman. It's her name, in 1997. And if you know anything about anthropology, you appreciate this. Because one of my majors in college is in anthropology, and my interest is in medical anthropology. And so that's a classic kind of medical anthropology book you read in your introduction to medical anthropology. And it's about an Asian family migrating to the U.S. and just the cultural clash. I would not give it a lot away. But if anyone is interested in learn about how difference in culture can create issues in our society, definitely give it a read.
Great choice. The secret skill you have that nobody is talking about?
Writing. Yeah, I do write quite a bit. And I used to write a lot. It's a way for me just to express myself. And I don't do it as much these days, but I used to, and I still enjoy doing that a lot.
Just write for yourself?
Just write for myself. I write a lot of short stories.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's like I said, I mean, it's just
therapeutic.
It is. And it's a way for you to escape, again, a little bit of reality, because you can create your own world and kind of, you know, play with it a little bit. So yeah, I do enjoy writing. And I don't think a lot of people know that about me.
That is an action-packed quickfire questions. Okay, before we get into the subject of you, mm-hmm. I know you have a foundation. I'd love to hear a little bit about your foundation and what it does.
Yeah, I mean, so I came from an academy in Ghana called the Right to Dream Academy, and the purpose of that academy, it was to, so it started with a man called Tom Vernon, and he's actually English, and he used to be a scout for Manchester United. And so he was in charge of scouting for United in Africa, and obviously went to Ghana quite a bit. So there was a lot of talent, but it wasn't the right development for the talent that existed in the country. So he came up with a way to kind of nurture the talent that existed in Ghana. So he started the Right to Dream Academy with the hopes that kids will be able to be provided with the right environment to develop. And then he quickly realized, well, not everyone is going to become a professional athlete. So the ones that don't play professionally, what can the academy do for them? So there was an educational component to it. And so the big emphasis for the academy is giving back. And I feel like that was huge for me. That's been huge for me growing up. And so when I got to the States, with everything that I've done, my father didn't mind, how can I give back to Ghana? How can I give back to a country that's given me so much and helped me to get to where I am? So I started the Josh Arrow Foundation as a result of that. And I didn't want to go the route of setting up a football academy, because then you kind of minimize who can get access to that. Because to get into the academy, you have to be a really good footballer. And
right.
not everyone in the country is. But every kid can use education. And so I went that route, and both my parents used to be teachers as well. So just seeing the way that the Ghana educational system is set up, the difficulties that it faces, especially in the rural areas, I set up a Josh Arrow Foundation to kind of help with kids in areas that are really struggling, and kids that cannot provide, you know, just basic necessities like school supplies and school uniforms, so that they'll be able to have access to those things, and make their schooling a little bit easier. And then in the process of that, there are other places, like one of the schools that I work with last year, we provided school supplies and uniforms and stuff like that for 200 kids. And some of the schools didn't even have the infrastructure. You know, some of the kids are under mango trees to study. And so my goal for next year and the year beyond is to be able to get access to funds and build the infrastructure for them. So that's like right now the biggest thing I'm dealing with, because it's not like, it's really tough being a student. Right? Yeah, tough being a student, but having to sit under a mango tree without having the right tools to study, it's tough. So the Pelsa Foundation, again, in its simplest form, is to provide, you know, basic needs for school children and to build infrastructures in places that don't have them.
That's brilliant. Where can people find a bit more information?
Yeah, if you go to joshsharafoundation.org, you have all the information that you need about the foundation and ways that you can get involved. And if any city fans are listening and, you know, you work for nonprofits that, and you'd like to be involved and help in any way, you know, any help, it's appreciated. And because I think it's something that's dear to my heart and, you know, something that I definitely would want to do. So anyone that wants to get involved, you can always reach out to me personally. And but yeah, if you go on joshsharafoundation.org, you find all the information that you need to know about the foundation.
St. Louis, one of the most giving cities in America. So that's the joshsharafoundation.org if you want to find out more information there. And just before we jump out of that, like I know community means a lot to you personally.
Yeah.
Like, could you explain a little bit about, you know, why you're so interested? Because it's not just your own foundation. Yeah. You're interested in it in the broader sense, like where you are right now.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, as a player, as a human being, I've had a lot of help in my life. And I think most of the time when we get to places, we often think we got there by ourselves. But there are people that sometimes help us without even us realizing. And I think especially being, you know, even being here, it's the fans, the community welcoming me, the team, you know, it's the lot that people do, you know, even showing up to games, you know, it takes, people have to work to get the money to buy tickets, have to take the time out of their day that they could be doing something else. And that to me, it's wonderful. And so when you're in a community, you owe it to the community to give back, to do something that impacts the community in a good way. And so already I've had a lot from this city. And so what can I do to make sure that I'm impacting the community in the right way? And it doesn't have to be anything big, but just figuring out ways to kind of put myself out there in the community, to make myself accessible to the community and just being part of it, really. Just being here. I'm not here to just play. Of course, that's my job, but how can I be part of this community that has already given me so much?
Brilliant. Okay, now we're gonna shift onto a subject. St. Louis City fans always love an origin story. You grew up in Ghana.
Yes.
You mentioned that your two parents, both teachers. Yeah. Tell us what it was like growing up in Ghana.
Growing up was awesome. I think growing up in a community like that, and definitely, I mean, even moving to the US, Ghana's really different in the sense that it's much more communal. You know, there are people that I called aunts and uncles that I had no relation to, but everyone kind of helps out. You know, you knew your neighbors, you had relationships with people, and growing up as a kid was great. You know, my family, I'm really close to, and grew up in a really nice and loving family, and so fortunate with that. Both parents being, you know, educators definitely helped with my passion for learning and education. And so I was fortunate because, you know, people always say you cannot choose your family, you know, and I was fortunate that I was born into one that's really functional and really helped me with, you know, with a lot of things. And Ghana is an awesome country. You know, I always tell people, if you ever have the chance to, if you've never been to the continent and you want to visit a country, go to Ghana, not because I'm from there, but it's people are really caring and loving, and open to helping out. And so, you know, so it was just great overall, just growing up in Ghana, and I loved it. You know, I miss it a lot because I don't live there anymore, but growing up as a child, I have a lot of good childhood memories that I hold on to forever.
Ghana is certainly soccer mad.
Yes.
Who introduced you to the beautiful game?
Okay, you're going to love this story, Pete. So it's weird because my I have three siblings. My sister, who's the oldest, and two other brothers. And when we were growing up, like, if my dad bought one thing for one of the siblings, he got it for all of us. So I came home one day when I was really young, and both my brothers played. And so they got cleats from my dad. And I was like, ooh, well, I mean, where's mine? You know, my dad's like, oh, but you don't play. It's like, but it doesn't matter. You know, you, whatever you get for one of us, you get for all three. So I kind of bugged him for a while, and he's like, fine, I'll get you a pair. I know you're never going to use it, but whatever. And so he did. And then I went to school, and one of my classmates saw that I had the cleats. And so he asked if I wanted to try out for his team. And I did. And that's how I started. So literally, I started playing soccer out of jealousy. I'll tell you that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I bet your dad's happy now.
Yeah.
Happy that you went out and got them.
It's one of those things that it just happened by chance, but I'm happy it did.
So there's a difference between having passion for soccer, which I do, but I'm a bad player. You have passion for soccer and you're pretty good at it. When did you realize that this passion could be more than just a hobby?
I think when I moved to Raja Dream Academy, because when I was playing for my local club team, I knew I was good. But then when I joined the Raja Dream Academy, because what happens is, again, things have changed since I left Ghana, but it used to be 10 regions in Ghana. Now it's 16. But Academy used to go to all the 10 regions. And for your age group, they get club teams to play against each other and then select players and then put the selected players into teams and then play games and then select players. And so they filter it down, and then all the players that were selected from all the 10 regions would come to the academy for about a 2-week period. And then pretty much was like a 2-week trial. And then in the end, I mean, out of thousands of kids, only 16 were selected.
Wow.
And so when I was able to get into that, I was like, dang. I mean, this is a country that's full of talent, you know? So from that point on, I realized, okay, now that I'm in this environment where I have access to really good coaches, you know, we had coaches from like Man United, Newcastle, like all these top academies in the UK come in and working with us. And then all our coaches were really good coaches as well. So being in the environment, in the right environment to develop, and then kind of realizing, man, I made it. I was one of the 16 players out of thousands of players that tried out in a country that's full of talent. I must have something special. And so since that year, since that moment, I realized, well, if I push myself hard in the right ways, I can make it as a pro.
Did you have to move to be in the academy?
I did.
Academy
so level? it was boarding.
Boarding? Oh, yeah. Wow. So that's a big shock to the system, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've been away from home for a long time now, you know? And so it was boarding. It was about maybe 3.5 hours, 4 hours away from home. And I could, you know, it was just like a regular school. I mean, I had breaks to go home and see my family every now and then. But yeah, I mean, imagine being away from home, you know, at that young age. And all I did was, you know, train twice a day and go to school. And that's it. And Academy, it's also interesting because it's set in the middle of nowhere. They did that on purpose as well. So there's no distraction. There's like, you don't have contact with anything other than the people that are there, your fellow teammates, and that's all you saw. And for games, we never really traveled because all the other teams played us at the academy because we had the nicest facilities. And so, yeah, it was quite a time. But then, yeah, that moment kind of helped me to kind of to believe in myself and know that with hard work and with the right mentality, I could achieve it as a pro.
So you had a singular focus, well, two focuses really, right. Education
yeah.
and soccer.
Yeah.
And then somebody gets in contact with you from America.
Yeah. What yeah. happened? So that's kind of a little bit of a long story, because when you go to the academy at some point, you get placed into pretty much like, I think, three paths. Either, okay, this person can only go pro because educationally they're not there. They cannot. So these are the guys that are going pro. These are the guys that can go pro, can go to school. Mm-hmm. And so I was in that pile. And these are guys that cannot make it as pro, cannot go to school, but can do some sort of, maybe can become a coach or yeah. something else. And so I was fortunate that I could go either way. With my parents, so my mom actually never wanted me to play because she thought that was going to take my focus away from my education. And she was big on getting my degree regardless. And, you know, and so I knew that in order to please her, I'd have to get my education. And so, well, for me, the best way to kind of achieve both goals was to come to the US. And my academy has schools in the States, high schools in the States that they work with. And so I was fortunate that I went to kid school in California, in Santa Barbara. And what they do is they offer scholarships to the academy every year. And then the academy selects one or two guys that they think will do well. And so in 2010, I was fortunate that I was one of those guys that got that scholarship to come to high school in the States.
So that's a big move. Yeah. That's a shock to the system. Yeah. That's a lot of miles difference. What were you, like, you land in the US and you're about to embark on the American dream. Like, yeah. how does that feel for you from an achievement perspective?
Yeah, it was a great feeling, but also, I mean, you're leaving home. When I was coming here, I didn't really know anyone. I mean, the school did a fantastic job of making sure that I had everything that I needed. I had, you know, and I had one of the ladies, she worked with Right to Dream. And so she made sure that we had everything that we needed. I mean, Debbie Foley, I mean, she's a superstar. Couldn't have done everything without her. So initially, and then when I got here, I had a host family as well. Which up to date, when I say I'm going back to Santa Barbara, that's who I'm going to. I mean, now they're my family, and I, you know, again, I couldn't do what I'm doing without them. But it was a little bit of a shock because I had been to Europe, you know, a few times, and it's like, yeah, you've been out of Ghana, you know, but Europe is different from the States and culturally, you know. And I remember getting here, getting to LAX. It was really late, I think. 2 a.m. or something like that. And it was funny because when I left Ghana, it was in the morning. When I got here, it was in the morning. I was really confused. Time difference, right? And then I went straight to, because I had a club team that I played for in Santa Barbara. And before that, they asked me, oh, we know you get in at around 2 a.m. We have a game in San Diego, you know, around 8 a.m. Do you want to play in that game? I had never trained with this team. I didn't know anyone on the team. Well, I had one friend that was from Ghana as well on the team. And they're like, do you want to play in the game? It's like, sure, why not? So I got here 2 a.m. from LA, drove to San Diego, and then a few hours played in the game with a team that I knew only one person on.
How did you play?
It was good.
Yeah,
did you? It was good. Yeah, we won. And the coach was pretty pretty impressed. I was like,
must have been pleased.
Dang, okay. I was like, this is gonna work out, you know. So that was my first introduction, and then 2 days later, I actually started school. So I had no time to really adjust or anything like that.
So this is information off the internet.
Yeah.
You were the second pick in the Super Draft
yeah.
in 2016.
Yeah.
How does that feel? That's pretty high placing.
It is. And I think for me going to the draft, obviously it was an honor because I came out as a GA. And it was great. But my whole focus on the draft wasn't really my placement in the draft, as you know, because you can get drafted number one and go to the wrong team and, you know, it might not work out. And so I was really hoping that I'd go to a place where I could do well. And for a long time, you know, I was everyone was projecting that I was going to go number one, and Chicago Fire, I think that year had the number one pick. You know, every team was like, yeah, you know, if we're able to trade for it, we'll get you. But if not, you know, so when I didn't go number one, I remember sitting there going, what now? Because Chicago traded their pick to NYCFC, who, by the way, picked Jack Harrison. And so we all know how the story ended. And so I was like, oh, crap. Okay, what now? You know, just sitting there, and I was like, this is, I don't know. You know, whatever happens, happens now. And then, you know, it didn't take long until my name was called. That's a proud moment, because I think that's a moment I had been working towards for a while. And it's not everyone that gets to be in the draft, you know. It's so, getting drafted was definitely one of the coolest moments, you know, in my life, having my family there, having just seeing everything happen in life. And it doesn't really hit you until you get home and you go, okay, well, this really happened. And all of a sudden you have reps from the team contacting you, okay, we have to book your travel because you have to be here in a few days, and this and that. And you're like, okay, this, it's a different life now. I'm not a college student anymore. I'm a full-time professional athlete.
So you moved to, you're a Philadelphia Union player?
Yes.
You moved there?
I did. So,
and how does that feel you as well? Like, again, completely different vibe to where you were.
Yeah, because I was in DC, so it wasn't like a long trip. I just took the train and, you know, 2 hours later, I think I was in Philly. So fortunate that it wasn't like an actual cross-country move, because that would have been painful.
Break all your stuff.
Yeah, so I just packed a few bags from my college, and, you know, I mean, I was in college. I didn't have that much stuff anyway, so. And then, yeah, got myself to Philly, and then a few days later, everything started.
Was it noticeable, the difference? Like, I've spoken to Roman Berkey, and he's like, you know, when you move to a different club and the standard shifts up, and then all of a sudden everything's a lot faster, a lot more intense. Like, what were your first impressions of professional football?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of realize this is not college anymore, because everyone there, it's, again, as example I always give, you know, you go from high school to college, and like, oh, okay, you can see the difference in the level, and then you go from college to the pros, and it's like, okay, this is a big jump. You know, it's because everyone there, it's obviously, it's a good player, that's why they're there. The speed of play was the hardest part, you know, making the adjustment, because, you know, physically, athletically, I was fine. It was just the speed of play, and you kind of realize, man, these are some smart guys. You know, everyone is seeing things before they happen, and that takes some time. You know, that's just an adjustment, and just the lifestyle alone. You know, okay, now all of a sudden you're a professional athlete. These are things you have to do. The workouts are harder. The training sessions are harder and longer. And you're kind of going, okay, well, this is my full-time job now. You know, you're expected to win. And you expect it to win in college, but it's a different mentality, you know. It's and now all of a sudden the pressure that comes to being an athlete, you know, playing in front of, you know, I think the Philly Stadium held almost 19,000 fans, and
good fans as
well.
Good
fans, yeah. And, you know, even making my debut in Seattle, and which is a hostile environment, and just moments like this. I mean, you know, it's you're put in a lot of pressurized moments and environments, but it, beautiful thing is that as humans, we're equipped to deal with those, whether we realize it or not. And so, and I had a lot of help, you know, from the team and from my teammates. And so the transition was a little bit easier that way.
So you were at Philadelphia Union.
Yeah.
You played for the USL team, which was linked Bethlehem Steel.
Yeah.
Before moving on to another USL club. Like, talk to me about a professional career. I think everybody projects that a professional career is a straight line.
Yeah.
But in every career, there are ups and downs, and there are moments of joy, like being second in the Super Draft pick. And then there are moments where you possibly question yourself.
Right.
Like, talk to me about moving to a USL club. What did you?
Yeah. No, I mean, in Philly, I was with the first team full time, but I did play a few games with the second team. And you know, life happens, because I had a lot of injuries when I was there. And most of the time when I was coming back from an injury, I had to play with the second team. And then, you know how it is, like, you might have a starting spot, which I did halfway through my rookie year. And then you get an injury, you come back. If someone is playing your position, they're playing well, it's not rocket science, they're gonna play. That's just the fact of it. And so I had a lot of those moments, a lot of injuries, unfortunate injuries sometimes, but that's part of the trade. And you know, there's a lot that happens because, yeah, you get drafted and you're like, okay, I'm a professional athlete now. This feels great. You know, it's coming out of college, one of the best players in college. And you're like, okay, I feel good about this. You get drafted and then injuries happen. This happens, that happens. And you're going, okay, is this going to work out? And you definitely certainly have moments where you have doubts, moments where you're not sure how things are going to work out. But then again, my whole life I've dealt with that. You know, I've had difficult moments in my life that has prepared me well for everything that I've faced and will face in the future. Just knowing that at the end of the day, you control what you can control, and then the rest will fall in place. And I think my father mentality for a while now, I'm not saying it's been easy. I mean, it's been a challenge, obviously, moving from MLS to, again, even when I left Philly, moving to, you know, USL and playing in San Antonio, with the hope that I was going to come right back up. Didn't happen, you know, and so I just had to keep pushing. And I feel like if you don't believe in yourself, no one ever will. I mean, it sounds kind of like a cliche saying that because people say that a lot, but it's really, it's true. You know, you have to be your best advocate. And you have to know what you have and what you can do. And so just having that self-belief, I think, has helped me a lot through the difficult moments. But it hasn't been easy. My career hasn't been easy. And I know it's not going to be easy going forward. But at least I wake up every day knowing that I'm working towards something. I'm not where I want to be yet, but I am close to it.
So you go into USL, mm-hmm. you don't get back immediately, yeah. But you keep the belief going. Like, how much of that belief is you, and how much is it like that the people around you telling you that you're going to make it back?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I have a really close circle of people that I trust that believe in me, you know, and but I think a lot of it had to do with my mentality. You know, I have what it takes to play in Major League Soccer. I do believe that, and I know that. And just knowing that everything is timing, because sometimes you need that. Some people say they don't believe in luck. Sometimes you need a little bit of that. And I think when you are preparing for a moment and when you are working towards a particular moment, with a little bit of luck, things will go your way. And that's what I'm beginning to find out.
Just before we leave this section, like, there are a lot of young pros mm-hmm. dealing with setbacks yeah. that will be looking at your story mm-hmm. and feeling pretty inspired by it. And they're also, like, I like the idea that people can listen to this podcast in their everyday life, that they're dealing with setbacks. What would your advice be to people that are like going through stuff right yeah. now? And
yeah, I would say just be honest with yourself, because if you can reflect, you know, self-reflect and kind of not accept things, but be honest and just know your self-worth, because I think the power lies in, if you know that you can do something, people can tell you that you can't. But once you begin to accept what people are telling you, then it becomes a reality. And I think for me, that was the biggest thing, because everyone has the opinion. Like, you meet people when, you know, they will have the opinions about you. Some already formed, some just through meeting you. And by the end of the day, if you know who you are truly deep down, that shouldn't cause you problems, because then once you start doing that, you start losing yourself. And once you lose yourself, that's it. It's game over. And so just stay true to yourself, even in difficult moments, because who you are as a person or in your profession, at the end of the day, if you stay true to that, you will get a result. You know, and I firmly believe that whatever you get in life, it's what you deserve, because what you put in life is what you're going to get out of it. And so if you are constantly in a place where you're comfortable with yourself, you're honest with yourself, you're working diligently towards your goal, more times than not, you're going to achieve that goal. And not just don't be discouraged, because again, it hasn't been easy. There are times when I was like, oh, screw it. Maybe I just stay in USL and get the best possible contract I can get in USL. Which if I had, I stayed in USL, I would have, you know, it wasn't bad money for what I was making. But I knew that wasn't, for me, it wasn't about the money. It was about, I knew that there was more to me than that. And so for, and if anything, it was a challenge that I was throwing to myself, you know, challenging myself that, yeah, I, you know, you can be comfortable here, or you can push yourself into a space where it's a little bit uncomfortable and unknown, but you're going to feel good about that later. And so just, again, challenge yourself and enjoy the process as well. Because when you embrace things and when you run with it, it becomes a little bit more easier to deal with.
Great advice. Okay, so now we're going to move into the next section. Obviously, your experience in USL went pretty well because somebody from St. Louis City gave you a call. Who was it? How did it happen? Talk the fans through it.
Yeah, again, talking about weird events too, because I was in, actually last year I was in Toronto, with Toronto, and before I got there, it looked like I was going to sign, you know, about maybe 2-3 days before I was supposed to sign my contract. It's like, sorry, it's, this is not going to work out, you know, and it's like, okay, great. Here we go again, another twist. And so I got back, I left, and I got a call from my agent. It's like, well, San Diego, it's asking if you'd want to play there. I'm like, oh, I don't know anything about San Diego, and I don't. And so it's like, yeah, you know, you can talk to the coach if you want. And so I got a call from Landon Donovan because he was the coach. And I'm like, oh, first of all, like, hello.
Pretty
like,
cool.
Pretty cool, right? Okay. And then I talked to him and I realized, man, this guy, I mean, for you, I grew up seeing him play, reading about him, and just his humbleness and just his openness and honesty. I was like, okay, this is someone that I can work for. You know, he was just really honest about everything. And like, this is what I can do for you. This is what I'm offering you. You know, if you take it, this is what could happen. And so we had a really good chat. And then I got to San Diego and he was nothing but a great person, a great coach, and enjoyed my time there a lot. You know, really, really good. Really good organization, worked well. And then, fortunately, Coach Hopworth watched all the San Diego games. And so last year, you know, I got a call from my agent. It's like, well, one of the guys I've worked with before, one of the coaches I've worked with before, he's, you know, he's kind of working with a new MLS team coming to St. Louis. I mean, he's interested in you. And, you know, we could start a conversation. I was like, sure, why not? At this point, you know, why not? So I got on the phone with, actually had a video call with Coach Hack and my agent, and he was presenting, you know, the whole idea of City and, you know, how the facilities were going to be and this and that. And I'm like, man, I'm sold. You know, just it looked like from a team standpoint and what this organization is trying to do aligns well with not just obviously as a player, this is great, but also as a person and what the club stands for. And so when he presented everything to me, I was like, sure, if it works out, I would love to be a part of this organization.
You come over, there's no team, there's no stadium, there's no training pitch, and there's this new thing called City 2, and you are elected as the captain. What was your mindset going into that season, and did it feel different? Like, it wasn't really a City 2 team, it was
C1, right? At some point, it was pretty much the City. No, because I remember when I signed, I came here because I had never been to St. Louis, and also I think I came here, met Coach Hack, met a lot of, you know, front office people, and everyone was super nice, and, you know, and that's when Coach Hack asked, you know, do you want to be the captain for this team? I was like, I'm great, you know, it's and then the thing was, I mean, he just said it's going to be a really young team, and you know, for me, that was a great moment, because being in charge of a young team gave me the opportunity to better myself as a leader, as a person, as a teammate, in a lot of aspects. And it's always an honor if, you know, getting to be a captain of a team. And so didn't really know how things were going to go, because when it's a new team, you never know. You never know who's coming in. You never know how guys are going to work with each other. It could go really great, like I think how we had it, or it could have gone the other way. And I think we're fortunate that it was a group of guys that were really nice people besides being good players. We had a really good locker room, and I think that really helped us throughout the season.
So when John Hackworth tells you, like, here's the vision for the club.
Yeah.
Here's how we're going to play.
Yeah.
And then you get on the pitch with the City 2 team and everything comes to life.
Yeah.
Like the exact vision comes out to play. You start really well.
Yeah.
And the City side were dominant all season.
Yeah.
Right? How, what was that? Does it feel good?
It does. It does. No, I mean, as a player, you always want, again, your job, it's to always perform on the field. But it becomes a lot easier when the coaching staff bring in guys that can do the job and that are willing to put in the work. Because tactics and all that will come with time, which it did. Because when we started in the beginning, I mean, the way that we, most guys were like, okay, what do we do? You know, like tactically. And just the style of play was different for a lot of us. But when you have guys that are willing to learn and guys that are willing to put in the work, well, yeah, you can figure those things out. And that's what we had. You know, you could see from day one of preseason that this was going to be a great season just by the way that guys were working and were willing to learn. And so the vision, you know, and seeing the vision come to life, you know, day in and day out was great. Because seeing us come together as a team, figuring things out, getting things right, winning, and that was a great feeling.
Winning does feel good. Yeah. There will be people listening to this podcast that didn't get the pleasure of watching you play last season. Mm. Tell us a little bit about the type of player you are. What position do you play? And stylistically, like, what do you like to be recognized for?
Well, I'm a center back. And I think most of the time when you ask people this, they always say, oh, he's athletic. But I don't. Yes, I am, but I don't see myself that way. The one thing that I like to recognize myself as someone that can be really composed on the ball. And that's how I see myself most of the time. And someone that can cover a lot of space. And so, and that, again, that ties into being athletic. But most people that I talked to, especially when I was in college, every time was like, oh, he's athletic. Like that was it for me. And I'm like, no, I'm much more than that. And I see myself much more than that. And I think especially being in the back, if you can be composed on the ball, it helps everyone out. Because if you're a center back and you start panicking, you start making mistakes, you're much closer to the goal. And that's a problem. And when you panic, everyone else around you starts panicking. And so just being able to be composed, even in difficult situations. Again, it's not perfect, but it's something that I pride myself in and will keep working towards. And just, you know, being aggressive when I have to.
Yeah, I think what people are going to enjoy about your game is you're extremely calm and your range of passing is outrageous. Like you're very direct. Yeah. You don't take the easy pass every time. You like playing through the lines. You're like a very modern center back to watch.
Yeah, and again, you kind of are forced to be because if you look at the evolution of center backs, it used to be big, tall center backs that could just, you know, be physical with strikers and stuff. Again, the modern day, most teams are kind of moving away from that into much maybe smaller athletic center backs that can play. And the game has changed that way. And so that suits me because, again, if you're going for the big, tall center back, I'm not your guy, you know. But if you want someone that it's a little bit more mobile and can play through the lines, then, yeah. That's.
And you had a pretty formidable partnership at centre-back this season. How did it feel to see Mr. Hebert getting promoted into the first team with you? Is that a testament to the bond that you form with him?
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, from day one, I mean, you could tell, I mean, off the field, we have a good relationship. And I think people tend to forget that what happens off the field translates to on the field. And just having that friendship off the field, just having that trust, knowing that, okay, if I'm going here, I know he's going to be here. If he's going there, he knows I'm going to be here. And just having that belief and trust in each other allows you to play a certain way. And I think the partnership that we formed was great. And you could see it. I mean, I think we worked really well together. And, you know, he's really hardworking guy, has earned everything that he's gotten. It was also a great way to show everyone else on City 2 that, okay, there is hope if you stick to the way that this team plays, if you put in the work, there is some room to move. And I think he embodied that really well.
Do you think that will be a big motivating factor for next season? Because there's a there's a few of you that are being promoted.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people have exited the club, but you think that, that this this development league, MLS Next Pro, do you think it's a it's good for MLS in general?
It is, yeah. Because, I mean, then again, like this club can go, okay, look at what we've already done, you know, with the promotion of, you know, Akil, with Celio, you know, and with Kyle, you know, and going. There is a pathway, you know, because it's much easier to get people to buy into things when you have something to show for. And I think this club can go, within a year, look at what we've done. And kids coming through, young players coming through, playing for City 2, now have that template to go, okay, if I do the right things, if I put in the work, I can be like those guys. And it's much easier to work, to get them working when they can see an end result.
You have a formed a nice bond with Kyle, but you also formed a really nice bond with the fans. Yeah. I know that whenever we're at supporter events, they always talk about you and how you would always lead the players to go and hang with the fans after the game. Talk to me about how the importance of a relationship with fans, but also, like, is that something that's going to carry through when we're in that stadium?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's like I said, I really mean when I say this, you know, the fans really are the backbone of this club, because I found that out in 2020 when the pandemic happened and we actually started playing in empty stadiums, and you go, okay, it's the same exact game, but it's different. You know, having fans behind you, having their support, just seeing them in the stands, it's an unbelievable feeling. It makes the game much more exciting. And just for me, doing all those things is just a way to tell them thank you. And, you know, we appreciate what they do for us day in and day out. Because I think what the fans do goes beyond just showing up for games. You know, you have a lot of them that do community service. You have a lot of them that are involved in many other ways. And so just as a way as players to say, you know, thank you for everything that they do for us and this community, and for supporting us, you know, in good times and in bad times. And so... yeah, I think it's a good tradition. It's a good way to just show an appreciation to the fans whenever it's possible.
And before we exit the City 2 talk, how many minutes did you miss last season?
One due to suspension.
One? So.
And then, no, one game due to suspension, one game because I got sick right before the game. I don't think people actually knew this. But when we played Chicago in Chicago, I got really sick before the game. I still was dressed, but wasn't 100%. So I didn't start. I didn't play in the game at all. And then one game I got rested because we had an Open Cup game in a few days.
So knock on wood,
yeah.
The fitness was incredible last season.
No,
Are you feeling good in yourself?
Yeah, I was fortunate. I was fortunate that, you know, there wasn't any injuries. The only injury I had was my finger, and I came back in like 2 days after my surgery, so I was like, didn't miss any time for it. But I was really fortunate. I think as a player, I think even as a person, we usually take health for granted. But when you're not healthy, you cannot work. When you're not healthy, you cannot play. And I'm really fortunate that last year, or the past three seasons for me have been pretty great, you know, without any major injuries. So, you know, knock on wood. And fingers crossed. And I hope that continues, because I think as a player, you can do a lot when you're healthy, you know.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about the road to 2023. How excited are you? We're 4 months out from the home opener.
Yeah.
How much does this mean to you? You know, your full story arc is coming close to completion. You're back in the MLS.
Yeah. No, for me, it will be a proud moment because it's something that I've been working towards for 3-4 years now. It's been a long road, and you know, it'll be a great feeling. 2023 is going to be great, because from what this city has shown, from what these fans have shown, even when we played Bayer Leverkusen at home in the stadium opener. I mean, you could see. And the weird thing is, it was because our supporters section, I was like, okay, well, that's pretty loud. But then on the other side was really loud as well. And so, you know, either way, it's going to be loud. And And exciting. And I think, you know, this city, it's really excited for us to be here, and we're really excited to be here and to finally take the field as a new MLS franchise in 2023 in a few months. It's a great feeling.
What are your personal expectations for next season?
Yeah, I think, I mean, this club has done, for just from like a club standpoint, this club has done a fantastic job so far. I mean, with what it did with City 2 and the way that it's approaching things and making sure that everything is done in the right way. And I think you could see that the success that we had with City 2 was not by chance, or, you know, it was by design. And I think it's the same approach that's been taken with the first team. And so I expect, you know, nothing but good things coming into 2023. I think it's a team that's built to win right away. It's not one of those franchises that's going to go, okay, we're going to give it 2 years, 3 years to see what we can do. I think this organization is coming and going, okay, we're going to hit the ground running and we're going to get results. And I think it's with the players that they're bringing in, with the team that they are assembling, it's definitely a possibility.
Some of the fans have said to me their expectations weren't high at the start of the City 2 season. Yeah. Then they saw how City 2 played and now they're like,
yeah,
expectations are high. Is that the sort of pressure that professional athletes thrive on, or is it a little bit nerve-wracking?
Yeah, I mean, you need, I think as an athlete, you need a little bit of pressure sometimes to perform. I think we often think of pressure as something that's bad, but it also can be a motivator, and it can push you in the right direction. Too much of it maybe becomes an issue, but the right amount, it's great. And I think, yeah, if they have, like, you have to have some sort of expectation, because you cannot achieve if you don't have any expectations, you know. And I think as players, we do expect a lot from ourselves as an organization. And it's great that the fans have an expectation, because then they're going to help push us. We're going to push ourselves, and together we're going to achieve something beautiful.
There's quite a long break until the start of the season. How are you keeping yourself fit and like mentally tuned into what's going on, or do you tune out? Like,
no,
what's the vibe right now?
I mean, literally, I just finished working out before we sat down. But yeah, no, the club actually has an app that has all our workouts. So every day you go in and you see exactly what you have to do, whether it's runs, whether it's agility stuff, lifting. So every day of the week, it's mapped up for you, and you just have to go into the app and see what you have to do and do it. And so, staying engaged that way, you know, and mentally sometimes it's good to kind of tune out a bit, just, you know, take the time to yourself and enjoy other things. But then again, I mean, every time I'm working out, it's okay. I'm preparing myself for the 2023 season.
There's a few new players coming into the squad. We've just gone through the expansion draft. Super draft is coming up. Do the players tune into that? Like, have you met any of the guys coming in? Like, what's the vibe around the dressing room?
Well, I mean, I think the expansion of everything happened really towards the end of our season, so guys were already like leaving. But again, you do see all the like expansion drafts and everything that was going on the City app. And some of the players, you know, I've played against when I was in the league, and it's exciting because those are going to be your teammates. Those are going to be the guys that you share locker room with, and you fight for and with, you know, day in and day out. And so it's exciting that way. Obviously, I think the super, like you said, the super draft is coming up. That's always exciting. Best of luck to all those guys. And yeah, no, I mean, it's exciting because you kind of see things coming to life. You kind of see the team being built, and that's exciting because now, okay, I have my teammates. I know who they are. I mean, some of the guys already, you know, we've been with for months now. But looking forward to welcoming the guys that are coming in and hoping to form a team that goes out week in and week out to fight for each other and with each other and getting results.
What are you looking forward to most for next season? What's the thing that's going to make it all feel real for you?
I think maybe the first training session. Because I mean, right now it's all okay. Yeah, we know who is coming. We know this. We know that. But once you take the field collectively as a team for the first session, and when that session is done, you go, okay, well now this is real, because now it's just not the individuals. You are together and you are collective. And I think that's the moment that everything is gonna feel okay. This is it. This is the start of something new.
Are there any games that you're looking forward to in particular?
I mean, just for rivalry purposes, like our closest neighbors were Chicago and KC. So those games are always going to be trippy. They're always gonna, I mean, you know how those games go. So those games are exciting. But I think our first season game, whether it's home or away, that's going to be special because that's the first time we take the field as a team, as an organization, as a city. And those moments you can never get back. You know, I used to talk to the guys a lot at the start of this year, and then what I told them was everything you achieve, we achieved this year is going to be the first time any pro team does for the club. And when you're able to do something, when you're the first to do something, no one can ever take that away from you. You know, like the team that played in that stadium against Bayer Leverkusen, that's never going to be taken away. We're the first group to play in that stadium. The first game, the first MLS game is always going to be remembered as the first game for this in the history of this club. So yeah, that first game is going to be really exciting. It's going to be a piece of history that will remain for a long time.
We were in KC last week and a few of the team were wearing things with City branding.
Okay.
And their local fans are saying things like, you're wearing the wrong shirt around here. They're paying attention. Even wow. the lady in the hotel, she's like, this is going to be blood and guts. She goes, I can't wait. So they're gearing up for it there.
That makes it fun. That makes it.
How much, I wanted to talk about fans. Like, we've got great fans. We had a lot of success last season. But I sometimes think that the fans don't understand how they can impact players on a day-to-day basis. Like when we're winning, everybody's behind us.
Right.
How important are fans when things are difficult, and what can they do to help next season?
Yeah, I think a lot more important when things are not going well, because again, as a player, when you're playing and you're winning, yeah, I mean, you don't need a moral boost. Like you got it, you know, things, you're feeling good. And when the season starts, when you start losing a game, two games, and things are becoming tough, that's when you need the fans to push you. And I think these fans actually have done a really great job, you know, because just, again, going by what we saw this year, we lost a game, it was still there, you know, kind of, okay, next one, you know, kind of there to support us regardless. And I think that's going to be massive, you know, just being behind us in the good times and in difficult times, just being there and supporting us and again pushing us in the right direction, because fans I don't know if fans know this, but they have a lot more power than they realize. You know, when you know that your fans are behind you regardless, man, that's a morale boost. You know, you fight because you want to give the fans a result. But then again, you know, like I always say, you know, these fans have been amazing. From what they've shown so far, it's been great. And I'm really excited to see how things turn out, you know, next season. Just seeing the supporters section, you know, being filled and being rowdy, and making, you know, especially for home games, making it really tough for the opponent.
Brilliant. And will your family be coming to see you play next season?
I'm hoping so. I think the pandemic has made it, like my family in California will definitely come see me play, but my family from Ghana, it's the pandemic and everything that's going on in this world has made it really hard to get visas to come to the States.
Yeah.
But if it's possible, I don't think any of them has actually seen me play live. So that would be a great gift to see them one day at a game. But yeah, it's still possible that they will show up to some games as long as there's no visa problems.
Okay, good. Yeah. And then final question, and this is for the fans. Have you got a final message for the fans that they can take into next season?
Yeah, no, again, I always tell, you know, saying thank you to them for being who they are and for doing what they do, for being behind us, you know, and for supporting us. Some of the nicest fans you meet, you know, and for me, I'm really excited again to be back next year and to be with them and, you know, to create new memories. We created a lot of memories this year, great memories, but looking forward to creating new memories with the fans and, you know, seeing their faces at games. But again, thanks to all of them for their work and for what they do for us in this community. Looking forward to seeing you guys next year, and let's do it again.
Amazing. And where can fans find you on the internet?
I don't use Facebook much, although I do have it. But I use Instagram and Twitter. And actually, a lot of them do engage with me a lot, quite a bit on Facebook, on Instagram and Twitter. So
great. So search Josh Yarrow on Instagram and Twitter if you want to follow up.
Yeah, it's I think this is gonna be. Oh, my Instagram handle is Josh Yarrow Official, and my Twitter handle is Josh Yarrow.
There we go, Josh. Thank you so much for giving your time today. You know, you're a big favorite with the front office. I know that every fan event I go to, they want to talk about you. We're so proud of everything that you've done for the club. The way that you represent the badge is incredible. And honestly, we cannot wait to see you playing on the pitch next season. And if you are watching this, give us a like on YouTube. If you are listening to this on Spotify or iTunes, give us a 5-star review. Tell us what you thought about the Josh Yarrow interview. And if you say nice things, maybe he will come back and talk to us next season.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no, thank you for having me. Thank you guys for allowing me to do what I do. And it's been great. The year is almost over. Happy holidays to everyone. And we'll see everyone again next year.
Awesome. Thank you for listening.